So council is back from a brief break, and congratulations to Google and the City of Portland on the wonderful news. Without objection.
Excuse me, Commissioner Fish, we should take roll.
All right, let's do a roll call.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Novick.
Here.
Hales.
Thank you. Without objection, we're going to take 172 out of order. If you could please read the title.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement between Tualatin Valley Water District, the City of Tualatin, and the City of Portland for design of new piping and meter at District Meter Vault on the Washington County Supply Line.
Before I recognize David Schaff, the director, I would like to just put in the record something that I discussed with Commissioner Fritz yesterday. And I just would like it to get a slightly higher profile, which is in connection with one of the projects that the Water Bureau is managing, which is the land use review process over the next phase of Washington Park, which involves disconnecting reservoirs. Because of the historic nature of the facilities, it requires a land use proceeding. Yesterday,
facilities at Mount Tabor.
For me,
the facilities. At
Mount Tabor. And yesterday, based on some advice we received from the city attorney's office and a discussion about various options, and with plenty of feedback from key stakeholders, we decided that we would change the process from a Type 2 to a Type 3 land use proceeding. And as you know, Commissioner Fritz, one of the principal differences is the more robust level of community participation and engagement. And it was our view that even though this process is not calling out the question of whether we disconnect, but instead the land use implications of an action the council has already directed, we felt that more public process, not less, would be beneficial. And by switching to a Type 3, it also provides for a potential appeal to this body if any member of the public is not satisfied with the decision below. So Director Schaff and I made that announcement yesterday. We are putting the clock back to the beginning. We will proceed as a Type 3 proceeding, and it is still our hope that we can stay within the regulatory timelines that have been established for completing this work. And I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her thoughtful comments to me last week about various options, and we think this is the right way to go. But with that, I'd like to recognize David Schaff.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. With me is Mike Stewart, the chief engineer, who has promised he won't say a word unless I get completely lost. As you know, we supply water to not only Portlanders, but to 20 wholesale customers. Two of those wholesale customers are the Tualatin Valley Water District and the City of Tualatin. And this is an agreement between the City of Portland, the City of Tualatin, and the Tualatin Valley Water District. TVWD gets their water from us, as well as the JWC. It's called the Joint Water Commission. And Tualatin is, of course, a wholesale customer of ours. TVWD and Tualatin have entered into an agreement to design and construct an emergency pump station to create an emergency supply to deliver water from the JWC to Tualatin and to the Metzger service area of TVWD. In order to do that, they need to, they've determined that the best place to do that is in a vault that is owned by the City of Portland and connected to the Washington County Supply Line. The Washington County Supply Line goes down from Powell Butte to approximately Shoals Ferry and Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway, and then from there into Beaverton. We own the part from Powell Butte into that intersection on the Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway. And in that vault is, which we own, is a meter that is both oversized, poorly piped, and not performing correctly. So we are going to be replacing that piping and replacing that meter with a smaller, more accurate meter. The purpose of this intergovernmental agreement is so that all three of these entities can come together and fund the design of the altered vault piping that we need to have done, the temporary pumping facilities that Tualatin and TVWD need to have done, and our new meter, which we're going to be placing in that vault, which will measure then the water that we delivered to TVWD. All of this comes together in this vault that we own, but that has pipes that other entities own as well. So that's in a short version the outline of what this intergovernmental agreement does. And once it's designed, we will go through a construction process. I'll be back in front of you to work on the agreement that would fund the construction of our portion of the piping and the replacement of the meter.
Thank you, David.
Any other questions? You didn't have to correct him.
He was getting ready.
His lips are sealed. All right. Thank you very much.
We'll see you next week.
Signed up to testify on this?
No one signed up.
Okay, then it moves to second reading.
Thank you.
And did you?
I thought we'd do 171 just to knock it out and then go back to the last time certain.
Okay, that sounds good. Item number 171 then.
171, authorized commitment to fund operations and maintenance of the South Waterfront Greenway Central District improvements.
Second reading and roll call.
Fritz.
The city policy is that bureaus are required to identify operating and maintenance costs at the time that a capital project or asset is planned, requested, or comes online. And this policy was put into place so that public functions and services provided by newly created city infrastructure are not jeopardized by a lack of funding. And they provide financially for the immediate and long-term service objectives of city investments. This policy applies not only to parks, but to all city capital investments. So when the new Emergency Operations Center came online, that came with additional operations and maintenance money from the general fund. Last week, I removed the emergency designation to allow time for more questions and for me to dig more into what the park's proposal. I requested that staff go back and review the calculations used to derive the operations and maintenance costs for phase two of the South Waterfront Greenway Central District project. And let me just pause to say this is a great project. This is going to provide an amenity that's a regional facility, a huge connection, a huge piece of the connection of the Greenway that was promised long back in the 90s as part of the North Macadam Urban Renewal Plan. And so I'm very excited that we're doing that, and I appreciate all of my colleagues supporting the actual contracts last week. When we went back and looked at the operations and maintenance, we found a massive $2,000 that might be deducted, but I concluded that that was within the margin of error of the calculations. So we do have to need to have an ongoing discussion about the overhead amounts that are vastly different in different bureaus, but this is the cost of maintaining this important part, including the natural resources components of it, and so therefore I'm requesting that we approve this allocation. Aye.
Fish.
The city has, I think, rightly so in the past, been criticized for building things but not contemplating how to pay for them and maintain them. And the policy that Commissioner Fritz just referenced was an important change in philosophy of this council, which said that we are going to set aside the money for O&M at the time that the project goes online and not add to our whopping inventory of backlog on capital spending. I think it's the right policy. I also think that it, having been the Parks Commissioner, when in past discussions people have suggested that rather than appropriate new money, the Bureau just look for savings to cover the cost, that would put us down the path that is quite contrary to council intent when this thing was passed. We're not, we should not set up a dynamic where we're in effect punishing the Bureau for fulfilling a council mandate to expand our system, and particularly so when we have just followed a historic announcement by Commissioner Fritz that she'll be investing in 20 new acres of parks in East Portland through Beach and through Gateway. When those are built out, we'll need to fund them, and I will support a reasonable allocation of O&M to do so at the appropriate time. We can always argue and debate the amount of O&M, and we've had plenty of examples in particular where the budget office has come back and said that a draft O&M was a little too rich and needs to be scaled back. But I am loath to create a precedent where we say to the Bureau, after it has fulfilled addressed a community need with council instruction, that they have to eat the ongoing O&M, because I think that would be a mistake. Aye.
Salzman.
Well, I do support the policy the council adopted. I'm sure I was here when we did that, that says that we need to fund the operations and maintenance of our parks and open spaces at the time they reach completion. So I will support this, but I do believe that really we should be supporting an appropriation, and I expect the Bureau, since the project will not be done until the end of this year, and our fiscal year starts July 1st, I think there's a $222,000 windfall in this for the Parks Bureau, and I will be asking how that money is going to be spent during the budget process, and hopefully it won't be spent, because there's no ongoing maintenance until the project is finished. So I will support that, but I will be honestly feeling that we should be appropriating about half that amount that we're doing today. Aye.
Novick.
I want to start by saying that I don't think we spend enough money on parks maintenance in this city. As Commissioner Fritz has repeatedly noted, we have a huge parks maintenance backlog. And one of the reasons I think that we should be taking a look at shutting down some of the urban renewal districts early, or at least shutting them partly down, such as the River District, is to free up general fund money for investing in parks maintenance throughout the city. So I do not have any general objection to parks maintenance. I do have an objection here because of the following. We were told by the budget office and by the city economist that as of now, we expect to have $5.9 million in additional ongoing revenue and $3.2 million in one-time revenue this budget cycle. So I thought we were going to have a discussion over the next couple of months about how to divide up that $5.9 million and $3.2 million and to weigh various requests against each other. By taking this action today, we are taking $500,000 off the top of that $5.9 million in ongoing revenue. And to me, I can't vote for that unless I've previously made a decision that this is more important than, for example, Commissioner Fritz's request for money to convert some parks positions from part-time to full-time. I can't vote for this without having previously concluded that this is more important than Commissioner Saltzman's request for us to build into the ongoing budget some money to retain the firefighters that we currently retain only through a federal grant. I don't feel prepared to say that I think that this maintenance amount for this park is more important than those other priorities. And I understand that the council has adopted a policy that we don't approve a park without approving the money for O&M. And officially, we have such a policy. But to be honest, I'm not quite sure what that means. When I heard that we had such a policy, I thought that what that meant is when we approve a park, we have an estimate of what the O&M will be, and either we cut something else in the budget in order to pay for it, or we do it in the context of the annual budget season and we have some extra money and we decide to allocate some of it to O&M for this new park. Instead, with all due respect, it appears to me that the policy is when we approve a new park, we give the Parks Bureau the right to, a few years later, swoop down into the budget process and take a bunch of money off the top. And that does not strike me as a good way to run a railroad. I also have to note that I think it's curious that when you look at the Parks Bureau's budget request for this next year, and you look at the decision packages, decision package number 10 is for O&M, and it says that it's asking for something like $400,000 and says that at least half of that is for this next year's O&M for this particular park. So somehow for this next year, O&M for this park is a decision package which is subject to our discussions about priorities, but for all succeeding years, it's something that the Parks Bureau gets automatically. So, I mean, I've talked to the budget office about, is there some way we can design a better system? And I suggested, why don't we just say that the Parks Bureau has to come up with a high-end maintenance deficit estimate when we approve a park, and we put that into the budget immediately? And the budget office raised certain concerns about that. The budget office has suggested that perhaps what we do is we have sort of a larger set-aside amount for parks maintenance, that's not for one project, for projects collectively, that the Parks Bureau would have to live within. Maybe there's some, so I hope that there's some solution we can come to. And it doesn't seem that there's an obvious one. But at this point, given that I don't think that there really has been an opportunity to weigh this request against other requests in the budget, because it wasn't built into the budget when the park was approved, and we're approving it outside the normal budget process now, I feel like I have to vote no. And oh, I do.
Hills.
My head is interested and attendant to the mechanical and budgetary issues that you've just raised, Commissioner Novick, and I think they deserve attention. My heart remembers what it was like for the Parks Bureau before we had this policy in place, which is that our infrastructure crumbled and crumbled and crumbled, and we had to start passing bond measures and levies to try to catch up, and there's more of that catching up to do. So I think this is a sound policy. No doubt it requires some tuning and some work with our budget office about how it works in practice. But in effect, the Parks Bureau often has ended up in a situation where it can't win, and that is in declining budgets, the city councils of the past have tended to hold police and fire harmless and cut parks. In rising budgets, lots of other demands come forward as well, and parks never regains the ground that it lost when police and fire were held harmless. So I think some rough justice is affected by this policy, even if it's still rough, and that it is a we should continue to adhere to this policy of incrementally adding maintenance funds when we expand the park system. No doubt we have other budget questions that this raises and that will deserve attention in our upcoming budget deliberations. But for now, I think the better course is to continue to adhere to this policy, so I'm going to support this. Aye. Okay, now we are back to our time certain.
Mayor, I vote to adjourn the meeting.
Item 161, ratify a successor collective bargaining agreement between the city and Oregon AFSCME, Council 75, Local 189-2, relating to the terms and conditions of employment of represented employees at Bureau of Emergency Communications for 2013 to 2016.
Good morning.
Good morning. Anna Canwit, Bureau of Human Resources. Darrell Gaddis, Labor Relations Manager, is with me, who is the chief spokesperson for the negotiations with BOIC and AFSCME, and also Tony Sexton, who's the operations manager for the Bureau. Before we present the ordinance, I do need a motion to amend the ordinance, 161, to remove the emergency clause and make it a non-emergency ordinance.
Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on a motion to remove the emergency clause? Roll call.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Done.
Great. Thank you. I am pleased to present to you the tentative agreement for council approval with our negotiations with BOIC and AFSCME 189. The city had several important goals and negotiations, and we did achieve those goals. First of all, this is a three-year agreement, and we did that in part to offset the number of agreements we had expiring at the same time. As you know, over the course of 2013, we had six open agreements. So having this agreement be a three-year agreement helps us stagger all of the agreements that we'll have open. Also, the city proposed that recognizing that employees should have some cost of living increase, but also in view of a $21 million shortfall the current fiscal year, the city proposed that employees would receive 50% of the cost of living, which is 0.9%, and that was accepted. The COLA increase is not retroactive to July 1. It is retroactive to August 29th. One of the goals we had in the negotiations was to make a strong statement that it's important with our labor partners to come to the table ready to negotiate an agreement in a very timely and efficient manner. Overtime was another major issue for these negotiations. Right now, for the compensatory time off, there is a rolling cap of 80 hours, which is difficult to manage. We ended up with an agreement of 120-hour fixed cap for compensatory time per calendar year. That will help the Bureau in terms of its staffing issues because, obviously, these are essential employees who have to be replaced when people are absent. Also, along the same lines, eliminated the vacation card. this was basically a bonus, if you will, for working 12 hours of overtime. It gave the members an opportunity to take a day off. It wasn't additional paid time, but a day off when there was not a vacation slot available. The Bureau had very little discretion to deny those. So, again, that created a problem with overtime, bringing people in to fill in. So that was eliminated. We did agree to a slight increase in annual leave hours. That was the trade-off for the vacation cards going away. And so it's a 12-hour increase, annual increase in leave hours. But to offset the cost of that, the union agreed that they would no longer receive premium pay for working on Memorial Day. The lunches and breaks, there are two changes there. One was to institute two breaks and a lunch per day for any shift over 6 hours. Based on their staffing schedules, and prior to this agreement, employees working a 7.5-hour day did not receive two breaks a day. So that was a change that we made. And second, we reinstituted in this contract allowing employees to combine breaks and lunches. It is something that the union stated, and we know from employees, was really important for employees to have, allowed them to spend some time with families and other personal business. It also works well for the Bureau in terms of the scheduling piece, because the more breaks and lunches they have to schedule, obviously the more complicated it is, because they do have to ensure that they have full coverage on the floor. Overall, this contract is pretty much almost about as cost neutral as you can get. In the out years, it's COLA with the floor 1% and the ceiling of 5%, which we've offered to every other union. But in the first year of the contract, there's actually a slight savings of about $1,200. When we get to year three of the agreement, the increased cost is about $18,000. So I would urge you, when we come back, to ratify the agreement and hear for questions.
Great. Questions for the team.
Mayor, I just want to say that you hosted a meeting yesterday. We did a disaster policy council, and you observed the outstanding service of all of our employees during the winter storm, and perhaps none occupied a position of such critical functionality as BOAC, and I think we should all just reaffirm what you said at the meeting about we have a debt of gratitude to our frontline employees for their superb service during the storm.
Great job under difficult conditions and not very pleasant temperatures on the floor, as I understand.
Correct.
Thank you. I want to add my thanks to the bargaining team, and both of management and staff. And there are many good elements to this contract that I support, particularly the shared sacrifice of the reduced cost of living adjustment. It's much appreciated. And if you could convey that to the bargaining team as well as the workers on the floor, that we appreciate that they're doing that. In the 2010 bargaining, which was an interest-based bargaining approach, we were able to negotiate the requiring at least one 15-minute break to be taken during the day, during the shift. I believe it's unhealthy and unsafe for workers to work 9 to 11 hours with no breaks and to allow them to come to work early or leave, come to work late or leave early in response for combining those breaks. Certainly taking an hour off combined during the middle of the shift would be a fine thing to do, but in practice, as we know, and I know this is an industry standard, that workers routinely schedule their breaks at the beginning or the end of the shift so that they're not on the floor. And I just, having been in high-pressure situations as a nurse in the hospital, I just think that that's not safe. And so, therefore, I'm not going to be supporting this contract, but that's the only element of it that I don't support.
Other questions or comments?
I just wanted to say that I very much appreciate my colleagues' comments, and it's an honor to be the BOA commissioner, and congratulations to the bargaining team, as Commissioner Pritz said, and both sides for reaching this agreement. And it does contain significant sacrifices on the part of BOAC employees, in addition to the sacrifices they make constantly. I mean, it was that the BOAC employees, like the police and fire, had to fight their way through the snow to get to work the other week. And they're not out front much. They don't get much attention. But they are, of course, critical. And, of course, I'm biased in this, but I like to say they're a lot busier than police and fire, because there's only 100 of them, and there's, you know, thousands of police and firefighters.
Right.
And they're all doing the same job. So, and also, I don't want to jinx myself, but I'm hoping that this legislature in this short session is going to give us a little more money to help with BOEC operations, because it seems quite possible that they will close the prepaid cell phone tax loophole. So I ask everybody to join me in crossing my fingers to ensure that that happens.
Yes, and calling the leadership. Great. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thanks for good comments and for good work. This will return for second reading next week?
Yes. All right, thank you.
And we are recessed until 2 p.m.